In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You are listening to the Grief Gang podcast, hosted by Amber Jeffrey, the podcast dedicated to having difficult and layered conversations on grief and loss. Through my own personal reflections on grief, inspirational guest appearances, and contributions from the incredible community, you will find an array of real, authentic, moving, and at most times humorous accounts of what it's really like to live with grief. It's not always doom and gloom, I promise you that. We know how to have fun whilst talking about the heavy stuff around here. So, welcome to the gang, the one you never asked to be a part of. And welcome to your bonus episode of the Grief Gang podcast. Welcome to this sunny Sunday, potentially, I hope. Spring has finally bloody arrived. Well, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, I think I keep saying that a lot, the Northern Hemisphere, but spring has hopefully arrived, and I hope that it has brought maybe a shift in you, maybe not. You might be entering springtime and you might be entering, you know, the calendar date, like the dates in your calendar of maybe like your death anniversaries, really significant dates with your grief, birthdays, celebrations that actually might feel really contradictory with the weather. But I'm going to stop talking about the weather because I'm not metropolitan, the Met weather. I'm not that. This is a podcast on grief, not the bloody weather. In this bonus episode today, I want to talk about timelines of grief and kind of expectations, because this was inspired by a recent DM on Instagram that I got from a lovely follower who shared kind of their frustrations and difficulties around how they feel society or perhaps people around them expect them to grieve, and or perhaps really how long they should be grieving and what feelings they should be feeling around their grief, and that it was really beginning to kind of take a toll on them and I guess make them kind of second think everything. And I so understood this message and this kind of confusion in that, because we can perhaps, you know, maybe be quite comfortable with, you know, how we're grieving, what that timeline looks like. And perhaps we might get a comment, someone might say something to us that kind of throws us off and we're like, oh, am I doing this wrong? Have I been doing this for too long? Or, oh shit, I've been kind of maybe in my own head, you know, when second opinions get involved and kind of burst the bubble. And I guess this episode is to kind of talk about that and in a way kind of give two fingers up to that. But in a gentle way, because I think, you know, perhaps loosely throughout the podcast, I think a lot of these bonus episodes are going to be, I guess, a bit more of a quick, deeper dive into like common themes that have come up in previous episodes, maybe with a guest or something else that I've discovered. So I guess just a bit more spotlighting on these kind of themes. So yeah, I want to talk about timelines of grief and kind of expectations around timelines of grief. And I kind of want to start first with societal expectations and what those around us might perceive what the timeline of grief should be and how that might affect us. So, and to caveat that, I'm going to jump kind of down to one of the points that I've got that I was going to finish on, but I guess it kind of loops in really with this, because when, if we think about, right, of like how, let's think about before any of us might have gone through our bereavements and the loss of our loved ones, think about what we might have perceived of what a grieving person might have looked like or what that journey might have looked like. And I'm going to talk about it from perhaps what my own expectations of a timeline of grief probably looked like before my mum died and now growing up with grief. All the things that I have probably throughout my nearly 8 years of grieving, have heard from people about what their expectations are or from people from the Grief Gang community of things that people have said to them, I probably did think them. And perhaps you might have as well before. And, you know, sometimes it's, you know, to be brutally honest, it's not nice to think that once upon a time, we might have had these kind of interesting takes on what grief was, but because we'd never lived it. And I'm not saying this to be like, you know, we all thought it, so other people are allowed to. It's not that. Sometimes, you know, we don't have to accept kind of what people's expectations are. Do you know what I'm getting at? Kind of two truths can exist at the same time. Like people's their words and their expectations that might hurt us, they're valid in them hurting us. Not they're valid, we're valid to feel that those things hurt us. But also looking from the other side of where and how, where does that come from and why do we think that kind of, because when I think about it and kind of what the model of what a grieving journey should look like, it's kind of not anyone's fault. And I don't want to, I'm going to flesh this out and I'm not sounding like a dickhead, right? But when I think about how we have all, you know, specifically in Western culture, been shown, specifically in, you know, like media, TV, film, everything of what the grieving timeline looks like, right? That's kind of what bases our expectations. So in ways, I kind of, and look, trust me, this has taken 8 years to get to this, and I'm not saying everyone will, but it's taken me a long time to realise that people's expectations and what they might put on us is based off what they have been educated on, what they have been exposed to. We've been shown, like, for example, oh, fucking Gmail, I need to turn that off. Can someone tell me how I can turn that off? Because I've been researching and I can't fucking find out how. Oh, is, let's take, for example, right, Disney, Pixar, all that stuff, right? The films, any kind of like, you know, big Hollywood films that we might consume, etc. The depiction of like a death in that is, let's say, someone dies, blink, you might see a funeral scene, blink, it's then it's like 6 months, a year later. And it's like, well, honey, what happened in that year? What happened in that year? Because from the time we've seen like the person die in whatever the depiction this is, they're skipping out all the necessary parts of like, what is the grieving process? And then what we then see is perhaps maybe a year on and we see the person is maybe full of life again and they're kind of back on track, like they're living their best life or something beautiful has happened for them. And so then when we see these depictions, yes, I know it is TV film and of course, you know, we know better to not be like, oh, that's real life, because it's not. But, you know, if that's what we're consuming, we're going to think, oh, is that how this is meant to be? And then so when we go through it ourselves, we're basing off what we should expect ourselves to be and how we're grieving off kind of what we've seen. And then to, you know, to eliminate kind of, if we're not just basing our, you know, experience and what our expectation of ourselves is of grief, of TV, film, media, whatever it is we're consuming, you know, it might be even a bit more closer to home. You might have people around you who have gone through a similar bereavement or just in general, you know, any kind of bereavement, and they might be showing similar type of things, you know, kind of maybe 6 months later, a year later, they might be, well, to what they show us, right? Again, this is always a thing with a pinch of salt. What we are shown by people might not always be the true feelings. I think we can all relate to that. Perhaps maybe the things that we show our friends, families, closest people is actually not the truest depiction of how we really feel behind closed doors, right? But what we're seeing is, oh, maybe after a year, I'll be where that person is and I'll be thriving, happy, joyous, energetic again. And then when it's our turn in the hot seat and we're perhaps not there, we think, oh, I'm doing this all wrong. Something's wrong with me. I need to move on. I need to let this go because I'm clearly doing grief wrong. And that's just not the case. But I so understand and have been there where you think, well, but if I'm seeing all these other people, both online, media and TV, film, whatever, personally to me, and I'm not modelling that too, of course we're going to feel like an alien and think, fuck, I'm doing this all wrong. My timeline of how I should be grieving, I'm just not doing it right. And like, referring back to the DM that I got, you know, this person shared that they're feeling, you know, they've received some comments from people kind of, you know, a year in of, oh, you know, you're still feeling like that. You're still doing that. You still can't do this, etc. And it's so hard. You just feel like you're doing, pardon me, everything wrong. I'm always so gassy on this podcast. Oh, I'm so sorry that you have to bear my flatulence on this podcast. But we then start asking ourselves these questions of, how long should I be grieving for? And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but is it bad news? No, I take that back. I'm just going to be the messenger. We grieve for the rest of our lives. But what I'm going to say is that it won't always feel like, I think it depends when you're hearing this, where you are in your grief. When I say that, of time. And this isn't to be, I'm not going to start harping on of time is a healer, because I don't think it is. But what I do think time is, I think time allows more manageable ways to manage our grief. It doesn't quite heal it. There are parts of my grief that will never be healed, but there are parts of it that I can manage better than how I did in the very acute stages of my grief. And so we grieve for the rest of our lives. To love and to lose someone that we love so deeply is to grieve for their absence for the rest of our lives. But what I want to say with that is that it won't always feel like this big, ugly beast that has literally a chokehold on you. And I think for some of us, when we hear, oh, we grieve for a lifetime, we think, absolutely not. I do not want this, because grief to you. And like, if someone said to me, you know, the very early years of like my mum dying, you'll have this for the rest of your life, I would have gone, I don't think I can handle that. I actually can't survive that, because grief for me was so suffocating. And as time has moved forward and I have become acquainted with my grief and actually allowed myself to sit with it and really understand to me what my grief is for my mum, did I then was able to accept that, okay, we're in this for life now together, and actually what am I going to do? What do I want to do to try and make this an amicable relationship? You know, like, I think if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, following the Grief Gang on Instagram, you'll probably have seen me sort of contextualize grief quite a lot, almost into like an actual thing, a being. And I often try and say it to people that I'm working with, clients and in groups, of that if we can, so it doesn't work for everybody, but if we can kind of view our grief as almost this new acquaintance in our life, which it is, and it is a relationship that needs to be worked at, as all relationships in our life require work, right? And that sometimes my grief is a foe and it is a really bad friend. And sometimes it is a friend. I'll put my neck on the line. Sometimes it is a friend. It's not to sit and say that, like, I love it and it's like my best friend, but there's some days where we are working as a team. And that for me goes back into the, you know, that with time it has become more manageable. But what doesn't help that, what doesn't help us get to that point, is when we do have societal and other people's expectations of how we should be doing that. You know, if we opt in and are like, okay, I'm ready to kind of do the dance with my grief and, you know, for the rest of my life, and then we have kind of outside noise saying, it's been, you know, I'll talk about in my own, you know, timeline, like, it's been 8 years and you're still talking about this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, because it's a relationship and it's a thing that I have to manage for the rest of my life. So yeah, I'm always going to be somehow talking about it. And that's not to say, you know, talk about, as much as I do grief for my work and for my living, it's not what I talk about every single day. You know, like, there's so many more facets to us all than just our grief. But it is a constant project that I have to work on. And so to society's expectation, that just doesn't match up for them. And that can be really difficult for them. They're just like, they can't wrap their head around it because they haven't lived it. And it's really hard to try and stay like steadfast in, I'm on the right timeline for me. I'm on the right timeline for me, when you've kind of just got pillar to post people saying, it's been this amount of time now. Why do you still feel that around this time? You're still talking about it. You can feel like you're just being battered from left, right, and you just got to be steadfast and confident in, this is what is working for me. This is how I'm grieving, how I am managing my grief and managing the rest of my life as I do the dance with this grief. So I think what I want to do to wrap that kind of part of is that, I guess, looking at it from two perspectives of the people perhaps in your life who, I guess I'm going to give benefit of the doubts, right? And take this as you will, because I think not everyone does deserve the benefit of the doubts. Look, trust me, I get that there are some people in our lives who say or might act in peculiar ways, and we think, actually, that just wasn't very kind of them or very compassionate. And sometimes when people say things or put things onto us, their expectations of how we should be grieving, sometimes that is just all they know, because they haven't been taught anything otherwise. They're going off, like I was rambling on earlier, about the depictions that we have been sold of what grieving looks like. And so then when they're faced with someone who is actually living it, right, and doing it differently, that's confusing to them. And so kind of, in a way, what I do, I kind of pay no notice. But I guess that is from a place of difference, because I'm kind of in like an echo chamber with grief. Like, I do this work every single day. So kind of the people I surround myself with are kind of singing one of the same tune, right? And it is, you know, every now and again, I will kind of, I guess, step out of my echo chamber and meet the odd person who might be like, oh, that's interesting work, or oh, you've been doing that for so long. And I'm like, yeah, because grief is it's a long time project, guys. It's a long time project.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So to put in a nutshell, to kind of round up this 15-20 minute waffle is, it's sometimes easier said than done, I know this. Pay no notice to what these expectations of your grief are. It's your grief, it's your story, it's your life. And whatever, whoever it is that are placing these expectations on you and this timeline of how long you should be grieving, so easier said than done, right? But try to pay no notice, because they're not living your life every single day. They're not managing your grief every single day. You are. So you have to find what works for you. And that might not make sense to everybody or anybody. But if you know in your heart of hearts, this is how I need to do this, or you might not even know, but you're just like, I need to explore, or I need to just ride this out. I need to just see what this period of mourning, of isolation, of hibernation is. You know, people might place expectations of you of, a year on, we should be out partying, socializing, thriving in our workplaces, more energetic. And if you're just like, I'm just not there yet, or I don't know when I'm going to be there, that's your boundary. And that's you being honest with yourself and kind of, I know how hard it is to, sometimes you want to be that version for other people, for yourself as well, but letting grief do what it needs to do. I think I spent those 3 years of my life before I started Grief Gang, I spent that, I think, living or trying to live up to other people's expectations of my grief and their timelines of what my grief should be. And then by year three, the gag was up. I was like, yeah, everything I've just been doing for the past 3 years actually hasn't been serving me. And the cost of what that was huge for me. It was such a dark time for me. And then after that, I just was like, yeah, no, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to at least explore what I think I want to do with it, which was finding other people and hearing their stories and understanding their griefs, and in turn to be able to understand mine. And here I am, nearly five years later of doing Grief Gang, and I'm still talking about it. And I don't, honestly, for 1 minute, I know my situation's a bit niched of that I've gone and created a career for myself in it, but even outside of it, there is not one part of me now that feels or that lets other people's expectations of how I should be articulating or not articulating my grief now. I still feel like I haven't even scratched the surface sometimes, especially here with the podcast, of what I want to be talking about with grief. Because, and look, it's taken 5 years to get to like a point of where I'm like, yeah, like I just don't really care of what people think or perceive of how I should be grieving, you know. Even to, you know, to touch on, you know, my grief for Poppy, it would be 6 months at the end of this month since Poppy has died, and I don't care if people think, oh, she's still harping on about it, this is now, I don't care, because I love Poppy. I grieve, and that's to grieve for her, because I loved her so much. And I'm going to talk about that. This is a human experience. Why on earth would I not talk about it and give it the space that it needs? I won't be silenced. I won't be silenced on my grief, because that would then also mean being silenced in my love for Poppy, for my mum, for all the people that I've loved and lost, and for you as well. So to wrap this up before I just start repeating myself, which I probably have, is do what you need to do. Live to your own timeline. Live up to your own expectations of yourself and your grief, not other people's. And it takes time. It takes commitment. It takes boundaries. It takes a lot of hard stuff. But do what you need to do for you, and pay as much as possible as you can. No notice to what other people have to say. It's all just hot air, what they have to say. Because at the end of the day, you know, just to touch on again, of people will say, and you know, they say, oh, well, I would do it like this maybe, or I wouldn't feel like that after this time. And you say, good for you. Good for you. I'm glad that that is perhaps how you might do it. And it's always especially great when it comes from somebody who hasn't lived through grief. That's always a bonus, right? But even for other people who have gone through grief, and they might be doing it completely polar opposite to you, and they might be living a different timeline of grief to you. You know, even listening to me right now, you might be thinking, this is not how I'm feeling, or the timeline that I'm thinking, and, you know, et cetera. And that's fine, because our grief is all unique and we're all going to do it differently, right? And that is totally okay. And it's just about having, I think, that respect. And when I say that respect, I feel like I'm speaking to people who are, you know, placing perhaps these expectations on people and what we should be doing. You know, there just needs to be this mutual respect across of, you know, my saying at the moment that I keep saying a lot is, I understand, but I perhaps don't agree. And that's fine. We don't have to agree of how we do things in life, how anyone does anything, but we should owe it to try and understand that, you know. We can say, okay, I understand that, but it's perhaps not for me. And that's okay. It's like the song, you know, it says, if everybody looked the same, but instead, if everybody grieved the same, we'd be tired of grieving with each other. Tune, that fucking tune. But yeah, that's where I want to leave it. Do it your way, because it's your life, it's your grief, and only you know what that looks like for you. So to round off this episode, I don't know if I put it in last week's bonus episode, but I'm in these bonus episodes, I want to rehash at the death dilemma segment. So if you've been a long time listener, you'll remember that I used to dedicate, you know, the kind of more formalized episodes to a death dilemma. And the death dilemmas are when I put out to you, the Grief Gang audience, a call out for you to share your death dilemmas, your grief worries, something that you're going through, or even just a story, an experience, like, and I'll share it on the pod, and I will try to give, you know, my unsolicited perspective and advice perhaps. And the whole ethos of that is, you know, a problem shared is a problem halved. So if you want to share a death dilemma, I'd love to hear from you. You can send them via the DMs on Instagram, or you can email me them at thegriefgang@gmail.com. or keep your eyes peeled on the Instagram. I sometimes put up a anonymous question box because I so get, you know, sometimes you want to stay anonymous. You don't really want to be having your name to something that you want to share. So keep your eyes out peeled for them. I'll probably put something out in the coming week from this episode about with that anonymous question box. And I sometimes put an Instagram question box up if you don't mind that you're not anonymous. I never share names anyway, just to get that out there. But if you're worried, you know, of me reading it and seeing your name too, of course, there's no judgment, but I can understand the feeling there if you don't want to have your name attached. So I'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to be able to share those on this bonus episode every now and again. And the last thing is, next Wednesday is Grief Gang's 100th episode. It kind of crept up on me. I kind of didn't really keep tabs on it. And I was with some friends last week and they were like, how many episodes have you done? And I was like, I think I'm nearing the 100 mark. And I was like, shit, yes I am. So I'm thinking about doing something special for it, but I'm not really sure what. I mean, I'd love to. It seems really kind of vain in a way to ask, but I'd love to. If you listen to the Grief Gang podcast and you love it and it has somehow helped you, I'd love to share that on the podcast. And that's not for my own vanity or my own validity, but 100 episodes, it's a big deal. And I'd just love to, if you have the time to, if you'd like to write in perhaps and maybe even share one of your, what's your favorite episode and why, what the Grief Gang podcast has done for you or what it means to you, what it has maybe taught you and about your grief yourself, anything, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be just about the podcast. I'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to create perhaps a really lovely special community episode. I love it if you would maybe voice note in. I'll probably put something up on the Instagram about this where you can get involved, but I'd love to hear from you for this special 100th episode. It would really mean a lot. I can't believe 100 episodes of me chatting for like 5 years. My God, how are you not all sick of me? But yeah, please do get in touch if you want to send in a death dilemma or if you'd like to submit something for this Grief Gang 100th episode. I'm going to have a think about it over the coming days of what I want to do for it and memorialize it. Oh, it's incredible. It's mad. Absolutely mad. So I'm going to leave it there. Thank you for tuning into this bonus episode, and I will see you all on Wednesday for the Grief Gang 100th episode. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. I appreciate more than you'll ever know your support of the show, and I hope this episode has supported you in one way or another. Spread the good word about the Grief Gang podcast. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Subscribe to the show on your chosen listening platform so you're first to know when a new episode drops. Visit the show notes below to follow the Grief Gang on all social platforms, and pay our website a visit to find further resources and ways to get in contact and work with me. Look after yourself and know that you are never alone. I'll see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.